Today we talk history and nostalgia as we chat to Mick McHugh on Benny Asking People Questions. Asking People Questions is proudly supported by Major Minor Music Australia, who wish to thank the people of the Gadigal Nation on whose lands all their work is done. If you'd like to know more, then head along to mmma.com.au. Often when we talk about the idea of taking traditional music to children, it's kind of pretty loose, and what we generally mean is leaning in on certain instruments. I personally am absolutely guilty of this. But within that search for authenticity, few artists really get to the heart of what it means to represent the music of another culture as today's guests. Not just the instruments and its delivery, but rather the idea of really understanding the centuries that's gone into creating its power and just how important it is to not only the people singing it, but more importantly, the importance it is to the families that come together to celebrate it and listen to it. It's a really stunning album, and even though over a year since it's been released, it's still worth visiting and discussing, really getting to the heart of it, because it's such a precious offering to children and families that I feel I'll be doing a lot of sitting back and listening to today's interview as we chat to Mick McHugh to celebrate his beautiful album of traditional Irish songs for children. And he joins me here today on Benny Asking People Questions. Hi, Mick. I kind of got a little bit overwhelmed in that intro, so I don't know if I trailed off and it started making less sense. So I might, you know, at a later date I can redo it and make sure it's a little bit more palpable.
Okay. Hey, Benny, thanks so much for having me on. I'll tell you one thing. There's a few things you got me there. One of them was, I'll do a lot of talking.
Yeah, I'm great. Irish.
And talking to war, family of six. My mother is like an amazing talker. So, yeah, I will chat away all day.
Beautiful. Well, look, I mean, the truth of it is, I was quite genuine about that. I mean, I don't have a lot of questions, not because there's not much to ask, but I really want to explore this album deeply, if that's okay, because it's an album that I feel really finds itself in the idea of nostalgia and tradition, which is very obvious. But there's so much more to this album, I feel, for you personally. Like, I feel like it's a real look into how you perceive your childhood, how you perceive your roots, how you see your connection to your country. Yeah. And rather than just a bunch of really nice songs that are put together well, I feel like it's this desperately successful attempt to really bring us into your life and what it meant growing up for you to be surrounded by this kind of music. So, yeah, less questions. It's really just going to be me letting you rattle off.
Yeah.
But to start off, it feels like that. It feels like it's you really trying to go, this was my childhood. This is what I had.
Yeah, no, you got it really, really, you know, that's beautiful that you picked up, and that makes me happy. And yeah, there's definitely stuff there as you're chatting. As you said, not so many questions, but the stuff that you spoke about are triggering things in my mind. And one of them would be, music is really, I mean, it's not an understatement to say it's part of the culture, because the Irish language was banned, right? So it's an oral culture, very strong oral culture. History, schools were not allowed. It was, you know, hedge schools and also. So you had to learn in secret, right, under colonial, because of the British Empire ruling Ireland. So it was, the culture was taken to an oral place. And then, of course, the way of doing that, same as in Australia, you know, the songlines through Aboriginal Australia, the songs are, and the melodies, they are right through the history and traditions of the Irish culture. A lot of the melodies would have been from, they started out on harp. Harp is the official instrument of Ireland, and it's on the coins. You'd have. So that was, these harp players were hired to, you know, you had your jesters and you had the harp players, and they were paid, they were revered, they paid a lot of money, and to come up with these tunes to entertain, right, the royals, like the kings and queens of Ireland, of different provinces and stuff. So those melodies were there through Celtic kings and queens. Then those harp players and all those things that represented Ireland were, you know, removed from culture and squashed. So those songs went, I suppose, underground. You're never going to get rid of stuff like that. But that's why they survived through oral culture through the instruments, but they weren't allowed. So that's what they are, you know. They, and it's just, right through the whole region over there. That's what songs are across the world, of course. So they're coming through that, right? So that's like a bigger kind of throwback to history of where these melodies are coming from.
Near a Bainbridge town in the county down, one morning last July, down a boring green came a sweet Colleen. She smiled as she passed me by. She looked so sweet from her two bare feet to the sheen of her nut brown hair. Such a coaxing elf, full of shook myself in the sea I was standing there.
So they've been around a long time, you know, they're tried, they're tested. Then if I bring myself into my childhood, like growing up in the, you know, in the 80s, from a family of six, every gathering I went to for cousins and, you know, my dad's one of seven and, you know, all of those had kids that are big, they're a big gathering. And I never sang or did anything as a kid, right? I was too nervous and shy. But every single gathering, it was music, right? There was, you know, food. There was something religious because, yeah, like two of my uncles were priests. One was a nun. Like, so it was always very, you know, that was a part of it. And then there was music. Mm. So there was always, I'm talking like every single person in a lounge room sitting around listening, and everyone would, most people have a party piece or a song in Ireland. And I didn't have that time because I was young and shy. And, but, you know, I realize now, once I left Ireland, I was 28 when I left Ireland, moved to Australia, I've been here 18 years. When I started traveling, I realized, I'd learned through osmosis. Like, I came to music when I was 22, but it was that thing of growing up with music was always a part of my culture. So every family gathering, everyone sang a song. I sat there and took it in. I didn't sing, but it was how could you not be influenced by that? Then, if I think about, I'm maybe 14, 15, so I'm into my teen years. And I am down the countryside on like a holiday, right? Where you go away for 2 weeks, you know? And we were allowed to head off and play the arcade games. And then we had to come back and meet the parents. The pub used to close. They'd be in the pub. We go to the arcade. And the pubs would close at 11:30, for example, last serves of drinks. And we had to be back at 11, you know, for safety. No mobile phones, all that stuff. So we'd turn up at 11 and we were allowed to sit in the pub. And again, these would be small country pubs, like a lounge room, a large lounge room, you might say. We get our 7-Up or whatever we were allowed, and we would sit there, and at that point in the night, you know, each person in the pub would stand up and sing a song. And this is when this is a really pivotal one where there was guys standing up. Now, granted, they had a few pints in them, and that's, you know, when I'm Irish saying a few pints in them, that could be any number there, let's say. But that's kind of how we talk about alcohol in Ireland. It's like a few pints. He's fond of a drink means he's an alcoholic in Ireland, you know, that's how we kind of gauge it. So, yeah, but granted, you know, the songs, you know, because life is hard and up and down at different points in your life. So that is music and drinks and friends is gets us through. And so I'm 14, I'm sitting in this pub at 11 o'clock and each person would stand up, and it's small sitting down, and each person would stand up and sing a song. In particular, there was this one pub we used to go to, and there was this customer who would stand up and sing the song in Irish, in Gaelic language, and he would be crying, singing it. Like, and it wasn't like a haunting, like, it was like a kind of bellow, like you bellow it out, and it was something, yeah, it's a good one for like an old, and it means like it's about a ghost and, you know, a scary ghost, but you just bellow it out, and then, you know, people be crying and stuff, like when there was other songs. So this is what informs, I think, Irish culture, and I could keep going on. Then I'm like from seven, because it's, I think they're, you know, and obviously different now with the religion hold that was on the country. So again, in the 80s, very religious, very, you know, it was all formalities. When you're seven as a Catholic, you do your communion, which is your introduction. You know, you have become a Catholic, and you, the year late, what I'm trying to get to is a year later. So you're seven, you do that, but a year later, you're 1 year older, your class then has to be the choir for the previous year. So even though I never sang, at those younger ages, I was brought to every, you know, week, we had weekly practice to be the choir for the group coming underneath you.
Mm.
So I got to sing and I got to be exposed to melodies, music, constantly. And if I can give you a good one, so that's some stuff. I'll give you a personal one now on the family. So my mother, if you walk into her house now, so we grew up like family of six, and it's a semi-detached house, four bedrooms, and we've all left home. She's there on her own without dad. But it was always this way anyway. When I was home this year, you know, I think when you have space from these things, you go away and you come back, you really see these things of your parents and your own life and stuff. You have that reflection. So you can walk into every single room. So there's four rooms downstairs, four rooms upstairs. And then, you know, you add in the bathrooms, there's a radio or music playing in almost every single room. Now, some of that, you know, it is a cause for loneliness. But it's always been that way. So I get, you know, she likes having the voices around. But then the funny part is I was in the kitchen there last year and I heard a song I love. And, you know, Modern Boy, I was like, Shazam? Which song is that? Oh, what sound of that? And I pressed Shazam, but there was three things playing at once in the kitchen. And I was walking around to each other with a little alarm, kind of radio alarm clock. Then there was a stereo. And then there was, I mean, the TV was on as well. And something else. I had to walk around. One is the news. One is the, you know, a CD maybe. One is the local radio where she's from. So I'm walking around turning up and down each one with the phone. Not that one. So there's all of that, you know. So music is that, like, that gives you an understanding of music in your culture. Like, it is, it is part of your daily life.
Heading down south to the land of the pines. Thumbing my way and up to North Carolina, staring up the road, pray to God I see headlines. Made it down the coast.
And going back to the idea of people getting up and singing these songs, and like you're saying, it's bringing people to tears. So, I mean, these are obviously songs, like you said before, that they've been around for, I mean, centuries, and they're just sort of being handed out. Is there... Oh, I wasn't going to ask. The content of these songs, I mean, does it allow them to kind of also morph into separate things as they exist? Like, is that the idea? Because, I mean, one thing you said on before, which I think is really, you know, I think Western culture has kind of destroyed a bit, is this idea of the communication aspect of music. I mean, it's been really turned into notes and crotchets and... This specificalities of music as opposed to just really what it represents to a group of people. So does that kind of things being passed on, does that allow people to sort of quite like with blessing to kind of be a bit, I don't know, I can't think of the word, just, you know, create their own idea of what that traditional song might have been? Or because I guess, because if you lyrically, something 300 years ago, I may not still exist with the same lyrics, may not make sense, like reading Shakespeare, but then it might not be as hugely prevalent to talk about the oppression of the king in 1680, do you know what I mean? Like, how much freedom is there within this storytelling?
I think there's both, and I think it comes down to, you know, and everything, like, there's always kind of movements, right? So there are, what I'm trying to say is that there are some people who are very traditional, and this exists within, like, if you think about Irish traditional music instrumentals, those, you know, tune the fit, like I said, they were created on harp and then you end up having lyrics put to them. But lyrically, yeah, people definitely... some circles will grow and change, and like there's always these movements of going, this is, you know, how we do it. But there are people who cling to the past, but in general, yeah, the song, I suppose a song, that's a song line, isn't it? It moves through the origin, the essence, the melody, something is, the core is still rooted, like, and has its roots, but yeah, it changes a bit. So a few things came to mind when we were chatting there. Maybe I'll start with, if I think about a song called Black Velvet Band, which is on the album, and yeah, probably a good example. So that is I don't know how old that song is, but let me try and, so this song is about getting sent to Australia in the 1800s. The Irish treat that song like it's their own. Like, we didn't colonize any countries, but we've stolen a lot of songs. But I always say it's a compliment to the song because we love a song. Like there are songs that, you know, not Irish, and we just bang, we love a song. Like if we think so, my point being that that song has a history as well. About there's other versions where it's written from London, but we, you know, it's, everyone connects it with Ireland. Whether that's, I think, you know, I suppose our emigration through history, and we brought those songs with us, and then to get connected to us. So the Black Velvet Band is, who knows where it's from, but there's an English version, there's an Irish version, because they change the cities, you know, they just move, change the name of the town. Now on that song as well, that's a 3-4 waltz. That was one of the songs on our album. We changed it to a 4-4, and we just said, let's do it. So that we challenged that. And I didn't like it. Like me and the producer, it just didn't sit with me. I sing that. I do Irish pub band gigs and stuff, so I'll sing that regularly. And I still sing it in 3-4. And, you know, he sent the idea, and I was like, it doesn't work. I don't like it. Don't like it. And then, I don't know, you know, because I did it all, I have a home studio, I got to settle into the sound, you know, and do my vocals lots of times, which is such a great space, I think, when you're trying to change something, be creative. I settled into it. It ended up being one of my favorite songs on the album because it's different. I love it, and because it just feels different to me, and it challenges music and tradition. But the then I was on actually an ABC radio show, and I was talking about Irish music, and I played this song and talked to them about this, and we had a text from a listener saying, still like the original, you know, like, so that's fine. I absolutely know. And then there's other people say they love it. So so tradition, it's always there to be broken. And but the core, right, the roots are still there, and it will still keep going.
In the neat little town they call Belfast, an apprentice to trade I was bound. Many's an hour, sweet happiness I spent in my sweet little town.
So there's a few of the things that came to me there when you were chatting about the Western music, the rigidity in the 8 notes. There's a style in Ireland called Shanos. Shanos means old. Mm-hmm. And they aren't, but they move within the notes that are in between. Mm-hmm. So there is that style in Ireland. I'm not claiming I don't do it, but that still exists. And it's very much a cappella. It doesn't usually, it might have, sometimes you can have like pipes or something that can move in between the notes. You can have, they might have backings on that, but that is a style that still exists called. So just something worth noting, Shanos. So the other one that came to mind is talking about melody. So Danny Boy. Danny Boy is an actual, what we call an air, like an instrumental tune. It's known as Londonderry, or we'd say Derry. The Derry air, depending on your background, and that song would have come from a harp, you know, player who's employed, would have been working for a royal, and then someone has put lyrics to it, and then, you know, it becomes this big massive song. But you can strip away the lyrics, the essence of that song is still there, and I think that's why this album works as a family album and a kids album. But connect it again with the Black Velvet Band, I like to do a bit of history on songs and try and, you know, go down a Wikipedia rabbit hole. Danny Boy, as another example, is a, you know, it mentions this, the lyrics are very, you're talking about Glen, and like a Glen, and which is very Scottish. The history apparently written by an English lawyer, and then it's taken from this music that, you know, from a harp player, possibly, you know, I don't know that for sure, but let's say it was from a harp player for, you know, in the Celtic tradition. So it kind of marries all of that together, yet everyone thinks of it as an Irish song. But, you know, it's everyone's song. It's from that land. It's from that area. But I think it is back to the tradition of Irish, you know, just like traveling. And when I came to Australia 18 years ago, the songs, well, here's a good point. I learned Danny Boy because of moving to Australia. Right.
Yeah. Okay. That would, I've got a question about Danny Boy. So yeah, this sounds like you're about to answer it.
So no one ever requested Danny Boy from me in Ireland. Now, I'm not saying they don't sing. Of course they sing it. But if that's maybe marries in what I was saying. So when I moved to Australia, I was playing songs that were maybe that were popular in Ireland within my age, but when I came here, I was getting asked for much older songs. And I didn't understand it at first. I was like, why are they, not Danny Boy, of course, that's a classic. I was kind of more teasing myself. There's a bit of an ongoing joke that Mick had to learn Danny Boy when he moved to Australia. And it's the same. I remember my mate telling me he went over to America for summer and he, you know, he's waiting, you know, and the Americans, you know, love the tips for waiting. And he's like, man, I got $50 to sing Danny Boy. Oh my God, you know? So, but those, what I realized in Australia was the songs they were asking me for were older because, and then there'd be Irish Australians with Irish ancestry who maybe their grandparents used to sing that song. So it's a few generations back. So when you're away, and I'm experiencing this because I'm living here, I have two kids, it's my home, it's my family here, the songs, the nostalgia grows and strengthens. And like my kids are going to, they listen to me singing all these songs. Of course they're going to grow up. They might walk into a pub or a situation one day and they'll hear that song, go, oh, my daddy. So that's kind of what happens with the songs then. So certain stuff may not be popular in Ireland, but then they travel. And because of Irish immigration across the world, those songs, I think, have, you know, cemented themselves across the way.
Oh, Danny Boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all their roses are fallen. Tis you, must go, and I must ride. But come ye back.
It's all relevant to sort of what struck me about the album. And I kind of feel like I just want to throw six questions at you straight away, but I'll try to step through them. But the first one is, and I'm going to use Rattlin' Bog as an example. Like, it is, you know, it's a really classic. I know it's not intentionally for children, but it's a very classical children's song in terms of you start with an object, you add an object, and then by the end of the song, you've added 12 objects and they're all doing the same thing. Very tried and tested thing in children's music. It's repetitive. It's great story extension, all that kind of stuff. But then going through the rest of the album, all of it lyrically really is kind of the only thing that separate. Like, I don't know how to say this without, like, I want this to come out really, really respectfully, because the music is so universal that I don't think it has any musically it's got no age concept. Mm. It's just lyrically it probably does. Like, a lot of the album has lyrics about partners and girlfriends and things like this that you kind of go, okay, Charles probably not going to get in on that. But there's something about the music that just is so family and so togetherness that it's almost not about the lyrics, even though it's totally about the lyrics.
Yeah, you're spot on. So I often say, rather than a kids album, like if you think of a traditional kids album, I often call it a family album. And if I look at my the age group and the people who talk to me, it's generally people, the predominant would be 30 to 40. That's typical. So with their kids. But what they've said to me is like, oh, they love it as well. And they play it in the car and the whole. So I think that's exactly right, Benny. So the music is probably, like we talked about, the history of the music is what underpins it. The melodies are familiar, tried and tested, and they hit us with because they're good, because, you know, they've been around a long time. They hit us because we know them on some level. We just know them without knowing them. We don't know why we know them. And they do something nice to us, again, through nostalgia, again, through because they fit together well. So, that was something. So, yeah, and I'll be really straight up honest. This is my first kids album. But this was a concept we've been working on for years. But obviously, I'm not, you might say, a traditional, if you look at it, like, I'm not the Wiggles, right? I'm not, like, the music isn't. So if Yeah, I'm not. If you have to, like, this in Australia, I'd say that's the comparison or that's the benchmark everyone thinks of when you think. In fact, we like that was the first when we met in Ireland, and my wife's Aussie, and yeah, we had our daughter over there, and she was one, and my wife went to an op shop and came home with a Wiggles video. I think it would have been VCR. And I was like, what? And Nina was in it. I was like, who's this? She's like, oh my God, we got the Wiggles for whatever, a euro. But so I did learn about them early on in our life there. So yeah, I'm not a, I don't know. Yeah, so I your question, I totally agree with what you were saying there. But the album, yeah, is a family album. The lyrics then, so we had to really look at all of that, of course, and keep an eye on that. And a lot of Irish songs, we all know, mentioned drinking. But yeah, so there is the classic of the Rattlin' Bog, which exactly what you said, you laid it out there, what it is and why it works, and it is the biggest hit on the album and on the streaming platforms. That is the one that works for sure. But then as a whole, and then we have, we have these 1 minute instrumentals, which are the, the tunes that were written on the harps, and then we've dressed them up a bit. Yeah, contemporary, I don't know. Yeah, we have bands, I would say, a contemporary scene. So doing pub gigs with a to adults, so I kind of married that. And also when I'm at these gigs, I do Sunday afternoons, say, for example. Of course I do late nights, I'm going to see kids, but if I'm doing a Sunday afternoon, so there's families in having their Sunday roast, I've seen the kids react. We're watching this for years. When you're playing those instrumentals and the kids are tiny, they can't help. But then the jig feels the 6/8 times, the 9/8 times, the things that are a little bit kind of move a different way. But and then just the lilt and the bounce of the simples, the dun, dun, na, 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 tell me, man. There's something that hits them young. And so that's, I was talking about they're tried and tested, and we as older we hear them. But even the little ones, I'm watching them for toddlers and fives, and they wouldn't have heard it, but that's the fact that these are good, and the melodies are good and they work.
Oh, road, the Rattlin' Bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, road, the Rattlin' Bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. On the bog there was a tree, a rare tree, a rattlin' tree. Tree in the bog and the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, road, the Rattlin' Bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. Oh, road, the Rattlin' Bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. On the tree there was a branch, a rare branch. Rattling branch, branch on a tree in the bog, and the bog down in the valley. Oh, oh,
so there was all of that in there. The lyrics we obviously had to chop out a few songs there at the 11th hour. Like, nah, that's not gonna, we'll end up getting cancelled.
We all know it wasn't a few pints.
Yeah. It was. Well, nice throwback. Perfect. Exactly. A few pints. He had a few pints. Fond of a few. Yeah, so we certainly had the 11th hour. We're like, we had to go through. I mean, obviously, we did it from the start. We're like, no. But then it's and today's culture, yeah, you could get really brought down quickly. So, yeah, predominantly the songs that are in there, yeah, do marry kind of the melodies with the, like, yeah, the Black Velvet Band. It talks about seeing a girl. So, and it's in just falling in love. And yeah, there is a stealing one in there, but I'm thinking there's another one. Most of it does have that kind of, yeah, that bit of love context. You've Galway Girl, walking down the promenade and seeing a girl, and her hair was black and her eyes were blue. So I think, there's a, it's not straight up kids' music, maybe, but yet it is.
Well, I think it sort of goes back to the idea of what is traditional music, what is like folk music, I guess, from any culture that has a strong history of that folk music, is this idea that it's always understood from the word go, that everyone's listening. And I think country music's kind of got that same thing where it appeals to everyone. And because of that, you can talk about, I fell in love with someone and I saw this girl and things like this. But, so does Pixar. It all just depends on how you're talking about it. You know what I mean? It's not the idea of falling in love with someone's not a bad thing. It just, there's many ways to represent it. But I think something like your traditional and like folk is, they know everyone in the rooms. And like you're saying, you do go through and go, well, that's probably not a great idea. But all of them, the whole album, you just kind of go, it's probably only the lyrical factor or some of the language that betrays this idea that it is just a really upbeat, fun album for children.
So that's right. And the choice of songs and the way we disperse the instrumentals, besides Danny Boyle's a closing song, which, you know, again, classic, we had to do that one. I tried to marry it with a happiness and a joy that I'm saying that I see the kids reacting and bopping on a Sunday afternoon. And I've done like, I live up in northern New South Wales, and, you know, you have your annual park parties and stuff. And yeah, the reaction, it's unbelievable. It like, you know, especially an event like the family event like that, like they just respond. And so I think about Irish music and the traditional like reels and jigs, which is just the music instrumental side. And then, you know, we have lyrics on top of that, but removing the lyrics, if I'm just playing that myself, fiddle player, kick drum underneath us, mandolin, like if you go to say a disco or something, I'm not sort of right. I don't even know what they're called, discos. You go to a nightclub.
How old are you?
Right. I know. So I was like, hang on, is that what it is? Am I going to sound old saying disco? Anyway, you go there and you people dance a certain way. They're looking over their shoulder. They're holding themselves. They got to look cool. Yeah. You want to, right? Like if I'm playing Irish pub gigs, people let go. You can't hold on to that ego of being cool. It just doesn't go together. It has this license. The music seems to give people a license to let go and have fun and be silly. It's like a license to go, let's jump around and be silly.
Yeah.
And I see that across, right? That's through my gigs at late at night in Surfers Paradise, all the way down to family shows or the park parties where people, you know, jumping around. There's a license to, you know, with a jig and a reel, to just hold hands and jump up and down and not. There's a license to
take
that
it too seriously. I think it's also the thing, like people actually, and I said, even I just said it, you know, don't take yourself too seriously, but I think it's the exact opposite. What you're actually taking really seriously is the idea of your own freedom, you know. Not taking it seriously is when you spend all your time second guessing yourself and looking over your shoulder, but you need to really be serious about how much you want to let go. The one thing, though, that we haven't spoken about, and I kind of want to get into sort of the production aspect of the album, is like with those interludes, The Wind That Shakes the Barley, 42 Power Flow, The Wonder, Hornpipe, Morning Jig, there's also the first one, which I know I'm going to get the pronunciation wrong, so I might get you to jump in that. The first one you have, which is Kesh Jig?
Spot on.
Oh, okay, great. They're also an amazing way to just show off the complexity and how clever the musicians are. Like, I think that's something we don't often think about with a lot of traditional and folk music, is that actually it's not a bunch of people playing three chords of the guitar. It's movement. There is so much movement, and particularly in this style of this music, there's so much movement through everyone that's involved. I've been playing guitar for years. I'd be terrified to go and get involved in that, because I'd just be like, I don't trust I'd be able to keep up and know where everyone's going. And that's the thing I really loved about the musical interludes, is actually removing the lyrics. You actually had these moments of going, holy crap, these are amazing players, and this makes the rest of the album so much more valuable.
Thanks, Benny. I agree with you. And I'm not talking about myself there. I'm complimenting the musicianship, like of the guys I brought in. They're all guys from my band. And then the producer, Damien Leith, absolutely fully agree with you. So, yeah, there was something I wanted to talk about, and you brought it back in. So the production, delighted you brought that up. When we're looking at the album, you know, doing the research for it, like I said, this is years in the making, as a lot of projects are, right? You know what it takes. Any artist knows what it takes to get something over the line. It's and to do something well, you know, you put a lot of work into these things. When we researched it for Celtic Kids Music, there was there's either a lot of, say, that like a harp type of music, and the picture will be a sleeping baby of about 1 year of age, right? So it's very kind of pretty, or, you know, a baby with wings on. So it's really pretty, gentle, keep them asleep, don't wake them up kind of, right? That's, you know, that kind of, so there was that out there. Then there was some kind of Celtic stuff with kind of choral children singing in it, same. So there was that out there. And we felt like there was a gap. The next one was then, so when you were asking me about, you know, tradition and with music and about changing and stuff. So if we go through Irish music as a recording history, yeah, like around the 1960s, if I take it to there, there was a band called Dubliners, or there's all these, it was mostly men, of course, who came forward, and they were like groups of men drinking pints of Guinness, singing, bellowing versions of these songs. And that's, so those recordings is it. And then, of course, they have those 60s and 70s sound. Then you move into, like there was in the 80s, and there was a great album called A Woman's Heart, which was all women of Ireland singing these. It was one of the biggest selling Irish albums ever. It was a compilation of all these Irish Celtic women singing songs, and that's just unbelievable. So you have all that. Then you had the Riverdance success in the 90s, and that brought on all the shows, which is Celtic Thunder. And, you know, it's like a group of women, say there'll be four women, stunning harmonies, long kind of flowing dresses, kind of that kind of show, right? Like a musical almost. And they have the male version, and it seems to be all those in Riverdance. But yeah, so we felt that there was a gap. We felt like for children, we were like, okay, there's all those elements. So what we were trying to do, where I'm coming back to, is when you say the instrumentals, I feel that there's a contemporary feeling on these traditional songs. And the underpinning is, so with that, say, let's talk about the Keish. The standard of that is, so we had two different fiddle players on that, who are both, I have lots of different fiddle players. And I was going to say something around a, you know, the kids show, I won't call myself what I say about the amount of fiddle players in my life. So we got the underpinned just with the melody, straight through, start to finish. Generally, you do an A part, there's an A and a B part in most of these. So you do A part, B part, B part, A part, A part, B part, B part. So maybe that helps, you know, lay it down. Like you were saying there, that, you know, you wouldn't know where to start. It's time on the job. You 100% would. And as a guitarist, that's why I'm not taking any credit for these. Yes, I add my little embellishments. But yeah, it is the, like for sure the fiddle players, and then Damon's production on what they've brought to that is unbelievable. Like the simplicity of it as a guitarist, it is a three chord thing underneath it. But we have just brought in a bit of tension that I kind of stuff that I like. And I'm happy to chat through it if we're happy for me to continue with it. So if we lay down the basis of the fiddle, then I brought in a second fiddle player, and he is unbelievable at harmonizing over the top. And yeah, he might play eight notes where you need one, but we just got him to do all these takes over the top. And that's what, there's something else happening in there. Then I've played the A part of the song, which happens twice, and then the B part of the song. Then it starts again. Then I change my chords. I'm just like bringing in, say, if I talk musically, say I'm playing the one chord, and I'm about to go to, you know, fourth chord. I put in like a seventh tension, just that bit of, and you're like, oh, it's building. And that's what you hear. And then he brings in the baron to bit of beat underneath it. And so that's kind of where, what we've done with it. We're just dragging it away from where it should be. And then we release it, and it brings it back to that celebration. And then you have a guy over the top doing that. And then Damien's production. I love and so proud of the instrumentals. I love them. Like as a general, I like playing them on weekends. Like I love playing them. They're so exciting. I'm always looking for ways to drag them. So I'm, you know, we're talking about the traditions. Yeah, I love trying to drag them in slightly different ways.
What it does in your album is it makes the rest of the whole album so much more luxurious and deep and astounding. Because you've had the chance to hear everyone doing their thing without being taken away lyrically, you know?
Yep. So I'm with you on that. With like I'm a songwriter, so I always like sit heavy on the lyrics, but yeah, it's good to remove yourself from it. So, and yeah, it is great to remove that. And if there's a couple of points that came to my mind there. One is when you're removing those lyrics and we're talking about kids' album, well, what's the biggest thing for a kid? What makes us a kid? Imagination. Adults, you know, you're trying to hang on to your playfulness and your imagination. And that's what we're always, that's what we, you know, can tend to lose. And that's what, when we get that imagination and happiness, that playfulness in our life, it brings a lot of happiness. That's what the kids have naturally. Removing the lyrics allows that to grow. They have the, like reading a book, and like reading a book and then seeing the movie, you know, the movie tells you, you know, you read Harry Potter and then you see it, you're like, oh, I didn't imagine the character looking like that. So I think it's the same with instrumentals, yeah. That by removing them, you're allowing the imagination to flow and whatever happens in the mind. And I chatted to you there about the, when we looked out, there was Danny Boy is on the harp for like sleeping toddlers. They work. That's why there's so, the melodies around a long time. So melodies on their own, they are enough. And that's, I love it.
Yeah. And I think
they hear them.
Yeah, and I think that's also what goes right back to the what we were talking about with the lyrics as well at the start, when we were sort of talking about this idea that maybe, you know, are they appropriate for children or whatever, and you've said you've had to make those decisions. But I guess now that you've said that, the first thing that I'm thinking about now is you know, I think of something like Galway Girl or something, and you sort of go, the reality of it is there's enough space in the lyrics to still enable you to come up with your own version of what that looks like, you know, and I think that's, you know, like you're not saying to a child, there's an apple, I picked it up, I ate it. You said, I walk around the corner and this is how I feel when I see that thing. And they might have the same emotions about their dog, and that enables them to just put in the dog, you know, or the person they like or their parent or whatever. And you know, I think that's, it's only just struck me now that that's part of the reason why the lyrics work, is because they're not so descriptive and so, it's emotion. It is emotion. It's not visual explanation.
I took a stroll on the hour-long walk of a day. I met a little girl and we stopped to talk on a fine soft day. And I asked you, friend, what's a fella to do? 'Cause her hair was black and her eyes were blue. And I knew right then I'd be taking a whirl down a salt hill prom with the Galway girl.
Hey! Yeah, I want to definitely add to that, to your triggering stuff in my mind there. And there, we're getting to the heart of it. Because sometimes when you ask a question, you're not quite sure how you're trying to get there, but you're helping me get there by... I want to share a memory of something I learned as a parent. So so it's a Disney movie called The Fox and the Hound that I watched as a kid, where the fox and the hound are friends. And that's all I remember from being a kid. They were best mates and playful. Mm. And then my daughter, when she was, you know, said she's 21 now, so turning 21. So yeah, we're going back when she's whatever it was, young. I started and was watching that movie because I had the nostalgia of, oh my God, I loved that movie. Put on The Fox and the Hound. And now it's from, so it was, I would have seen it in the 80s. So let's say it's made there or before, maybe the 70s, whenever it was. There's a scene in the movie because the farmer, of course, you know, the fox and the hound are not allowed to be friends. There was a scene where there's a double barrel shotgun, you know, it's animated, pointed at the screen, pointing at you. I was a parent with my kid going horrified, going, what the? I was like, how can they do that? And then I was like going, I have no memory of that.
Yeah.
That's not what I remember from the movie at all. It meant nothing to me as a kid. It meant nothing. I had to catch myself and go, why do I not remember that? All I remember is their beautiful friendship, them playing, you know, doing that kind of frolicking friend thing. And I do remember they weren't allowed to be friends, but then they became friends anyway. So as adults, we're judging it completely different. Yeah. Like, of course, I'm not saying the gun pointing at the screen is a good thing or bad thing, but
no, I understand.
Someone might argue, you know, if you went Freudian, like maybe I do, and maybe there's some part of me that has affected me that you could, but I don't remember that. It wasn't what stood out to me. So if we talk about these songs and lyrics, Like, if I think about the Galway Girl, there's all these lyrics of, you know, what probably I would guess the kids lock onto, her hair was black and her eyes were blue. You know, for as a, I would think that's probably what they're latching onto. Or there's a lyric goes, D-I-A-I-A. That's what they're probably, you know. So what we lock onto as adults and parents is, we don't know what the kids are locking onto, and we'll have that's our playfulness and imagination that we've got to catch ourselves. So we pulled out any, you know, the few drinks, kind of pull that out of the shop. But overall, and like Danny Boy, you know, like they're, you know, it's a funeral song mostly, you know, used, but you know, it is talking about the Glen and I'll come to you, and so we don't.
I agree, and I also think that's what makes the. I mean, if we're particularly going to lean in on like the Irish culture, I mean, that is why the songs can be played to 4-year-olds and 90-year-olds, because it's everyone's catered for. Everyone takes away what they need to take away from. Some people are using it because it reminds them of a, you know, old love. Some people are using it because, like you're saying, they just think of hair and the blue eyes and maybe they have a dog like that. Like, everyone's got a different, it means, you know, and I think that's kind of what's really beautiful about this album. And really, really beautiful. And you're saying all the right things, because I didn't know how to get to where you've gotten to talking about it. So I'm glad you've sort of, we've managed to make it there. Is it, there's just something really beautiful and look, ridiculous to say, but timeless, but there's just, exactly what you said. There's this immediate idea of going, well, I've gone to sleep at night hugging this music forever. Like, it's just been around forever, you know? And that, I don't think that has an age.
That's right.
It hasn't
got
an age of appeal.
That's right. And that's what we felt like. That's why, you know, that we felt the space was there for the album, and felt like, you know, do the recordings and they'll be a bit, you'd hope, you know, so that's every, as an artist, I believe they are timeless, and that the recordings are there, that they'll always stand up to be enjoyed as music. And of course, being in Australia, people like myself, you know, emigrated and called this place home. There's a whole wave. Australia's always been such a connection for Irish people. There's a whole wave of Irish people coming in here. And I've been gigging here for, as I said, nearly 20 years. And a lot of my, the people who come to my gigs, they're all having kids, you know, they're all like, they've all got 1 and 2 year olds, like they're hitting their 40s. A lot of them are coming up to that. So a lot of them have kids now, and they're all like, so they're loving the album. Then you have the Irish, you know, people like I've chatted about whose parents, grandparents sang Danny Boy. So that's where it's getting enjoyed. And then, you know, if I can see from my playlist, like the Rattling Bog and stuff, that's getting used in the preschools and stuff. And so,
They're huge numbers, man. I was looking at them yesterday going, whoa, these are actually monstrous.
It is, Benny. It's,
it's a million for the top two, isn't it, or something?
The Rattling Bog is there. I could take you down, like, you know, as an artist journey. Maybe that's a separate podcast, but I'll try and summarize it. But it's a long apprenticeship to be a musician, right? It's a forever apprenticeship. You're really learning it as you go. When I made this, and as I've come as an artist, I was just like, I'm happy with it. Yeah. I didn't. Whereas before, I think when I did my first ones, I put them out and I always wanted to know, oh, what do you think? What do you like? Is this okay? I think it only come with time, or maybe not so much. Maybe I was going to start, but I was like, I think these are good. I believe they're good. I've put everything on. I've done my research. They're good. And I was like, so I made it. I was like, bang, that's good. I've delivered a good product. And the product is only as good as that, as you were at that moment. Of course, in me, I listen to it and I go, oh gosh, why did I do that? Oh, that's flat. That's this. That's, of course I do all those things. But the mature artist in me knows that it's like a photograph taken on a day. When I released it 2 years ago, that was the photograph. Because once you master it, snapshot. That's it. Yeah. That's as good as I was at that moment. And there are the decisions I made in those moments. And you have to look at it and go, bang, done, move on. But I know, it's like, proudly, I put everything I could at that moment.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone. She wheeled her wheelbarrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive.
So years ago, like, I used to be waiting for someone, oh, do you like this, do you not? So it's been beautiful to just, but it's come with age that I just was like, I'm happy that I put it out, and the response has been brilliant. And I'm like moving on to the next one. And yeah, it's great. It's a great, great journey that, but that's only come with age. And I'm proud of them, and great to see that people are loving it. And it's gorgeous when people say to me that, you know, they'll, families say to me, oh, you know, it's just the joy in jumping around. I mean, that is, you know, you're humble as you get older, and you know, it's not you, that it is this music and your connection to people. That's unbelievable as an artist.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak hugely on the other music and how you feel about your music for adults and things like that. But I guess the one thing about this album, when you talk about, you know, you're really happy with it. I mean, one of the things that really stands out is this album, it doesn't feel like it's for you. I just feel like there's a bigger purpose behind all of it. Yeah. Like, I feel like it is, like we said at the start, this is you kind of going, this is my childhood I want to share with you.
Yeah.
This is what I want to give to your childhood. This is the thing of my culture that I just, you know, I don't think it's really hitting the point here. I want to bring that out and help that along. And I think there's so many other, I don't know, it feels as a listener that there's so much more. You're coming at it from so many other different things that aren't necessarily coming straight from you. They're coming from your desire to represent something else. Now, obviously, because, you know, we've probably got a little bit longer. And as you said, I feel like this could just go on forever because it's pretty insightful. But there are a couple of things, just like stepping away from the heart, and let's actually just talk about the brain. What's the recording process for you? Because this latest album that I've just recorded, I quite intentionally had X amount of musicians, as I mentioned before, these really incredible players. And what I did was I gave them carte blanche to kind of come in and add their bits and do their things. And then I said, we're going to go and record it. And whatever we do, it has to be able to be done live. So I don't want to add 58 guitars and 38 parts and six other. Sounds really simple and easy, and then all of a sudden you're in there and you're going, oh, maybe if I just like go over here and put this thing on it. But you, I guess traditionally it's a fairly reasonably boxed in array of instruments and coordination of instruments to a certain degree, like with your fiddle and things like that.
The core.
How easy is that for you to do? Was it hard not to just want to go and start adding thousands of other things, or was it just important from the get-go? You went, this is how these songs exist, so we need to make it work within these realms. Or Danny Boy, which I'll ask later on, is the one real exception where you've I'll just ask you now. It's quite funny that it's the most well-known song, yet you abandon almost the version we all expect and know, and have this really beautiful, which, you know, you've sort of spoken about why it was beautiful. I thought it was an amazing thing to do that because it was what everybody wanted. And then when you got to it, you went, oh, you've really just made your own version of it. But the rest of the album, coming to recording it and things like that, was it really hard to resist the temptation of just layer, 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 and just keep adding stuff?
I think I'm trying to just process the question. I'm thinking no, that I think, yeah, I don't think, I mean, so there's a slight bit of me that says yes, because of, as you mentioned there, as the artist, you're always.
Yeah.
Because when you're recording and mixing, that's like a kid with Lego building and free, not following the instruction book, just here's a box of Lego, off you go. I'm talking of those analogies for myself. That would be me, and it is the most exciting part of an album. You know, you've got freedom. Once you master it, you're like, it's done. So, the course is a part of me that, you know, always wants more. But the core was because I'm doing my adult gigs with my band called, I should give them a plug, the Gathering Irish Band, which keeps me busy on weekends doing Kick-Ass Irish Band, kind of barn dance type of stuff. So I suppose I married that Yeah, and that's like, so predominantly those gigs are me on the acoustic guitar. I play different. I've got a dadgad guitar as well. That's, you know, you're talking about the music. That's, I should have mentioned that. That is another thing behind the instrumentals, the kesh. Mm. So I play standard as well, but also dadgad, which is like a D tuning, but you change one note and then it can kind of, it's not minor and it's not major. And that's what gives it a little bit of like, it just supports the tune. So, but so predominantly on weekends, I'm doing gigs with the acoustic guitar in that kind of open tuning. I've got the kick drum underneath me, like a beat. I've got a tambourine on the other foot. Then I have a mandolin player. I've got a fiddle player. Yeah, I've got piano, accordion. So that is what, and then I've got bass and stuff in my guitar and stuff. So yeah, like I'm married what I'm doing on the weekends with the recording. I'm a singer-songwriter. So I have the, I've always loved songs. Like, and I, you know, we talked about the history. So I, you're talking about there as well also, but why we do that, to feel like there's a purpose, like some, there's a purpose in me as an artist. Like, of course you're doing it for yourself to put something out in the world to, you know, as a career, you need to survive, pay the bills and stuff. But music for me is a vocation. That's what it is. At the essence, like, why do I, like, I came home at 3 a.m. last night from Surfers Paradise. I'll be back up again. Like, why do I keep going back out there? Why do I get back on the horse every weekend? Like, what makes me do that? What makes me drive? I live an hour and a half now. I used to have a residency when I started out. Was, now this is insane, but 3 hours away, 6 months locked in. You know, two kids. I was like, I'll take it. Who? I question myself. Like, who does that, and why do they do that? Maybe it's there's plenty of jokes you can say why I do it, but there's a vocation that makes me want to do that. Is it the ego? Is it all these different things? Is it like a hyper focused, neurodivergent? But it's in love. It's a vocation that, and COVID reminded me of this even more and compounded that, that to see people having joy at a gig, like working, like I'm an engineer. Like, we all know what it's like to work in a job, and you know, I've done teaching stuff. Like, it's we all know that we want to be having a good time. So to come out on the weekend, have a few pints, listen to music, and I watch, I get to be that person who brings that. I said that my two uncles, they were priests. You know, my other auntie just passed away. She was a nun. They're all vocation people. And theirs was religion. I kind of see myself as a musician. That is my job, is to bring music to people. So that's the core. That's the essence. That's why I do it. So bringing back, I have the gathering, which is that, like, doing that on the weekends. Then I'm a singer-songwriter. And I suppose, and then I've got that Irish kind of culture of music, the importance of music. And I've married all that.
Well, the summer time is coming, and the trees are sweetly blooming. We're a wild mountain thyme grows around the blooming heather. Will ye go, lassie?
Other thing about the production, and I think where I raised the bar on the recording production, is because of COVID, I set up a home studio.
Yeah, right.
That changed everything for me, not having the red light on, and because I can get, like, I'm pretty nervous. Like, I still feel like, you know, you have the imposter syndrome, of course I do. I was 22 when I really became a musician. I decided to learn guitar because of depression. And I was like, I need to change my life. And next thing I found this thing that was in me. And it was like a, so when I'm talking about vocation, it saved me. And I'm trying to bring that back. I realized what music did for me, and I'm trying to deliver that back to people. So that brings in, this is what I'm saying, it's a whole other podcast. We could go, might go again, Benny. But so in terms of production, your question, yeah, it was a little, I kept it pretty straight in there. But yeah, you know, I brought in, just married those things as a singer-songwriter. Like, I've researched all the songs, where they come from, who wrote them, what is it about. I brought in the element of the kick-ass from weekends. I brought in my kind of passion, vocation to deliver songs for people. I had the home recording. That just helped me so much to just go. I've been meaning to do it for years, me and my wife, and we're like, this is it, let's do it. And that was a journey in itself to learn all that, but we did it. And that's I think empowered me to have the space, like I was saying with the Black Velvet Band, I got to explore that. Danny Boy, you mentioned there, yeah, we did do a different version because every single person in the world, it turns out, has recorded that. You search it up now, Danny Boy. You know, I think of a few, you know, there's Johnny Cash, there's like everyone's done. I mean, everyone. So yeah, with that one, we felt like, well, we don't, it's out there like a million times. There's harp versions, there's every single version in the world is out there. So we went for a version that we felt was a bit, I suppose, and this is down to Damien Leith, the producer, you know, I love working with him, a great friendship. That's another thing that worked great. That's a 10-year relationship. It wasn't just a new producer that I
was going to. I was going to ask about him. Like he's obviously plays a big part in what your final product in all this, and what is the relationship with him? Is it just total trust and total faith? And
yes, all of those things. So, my journey now again, you know, is I can look back and realize all my situations are connections and friendships, and that's where I'm at a comfortable space, and I'm not looking for any, like, because when you start out, of course you have stars in your eyes and you want successes and you know, whatever, you might think you're going to be in the radio or these different things, and you go chasing that, and then you find your space as a musician, and you have certain people who keep coming crossing paths and stick out in your life, and you realize, huh, they're a good one, you know. And yeah, so Damon's just someone, obviously, and we're both Irish, that's the connection, and we're kind of similar ages, and yeah, we just kept crossing paths. He's always been really, really kind to me and good to me as a, because he's, you know, done it longer and has had big successes with Australian Idol and his own journey. And yeah, it's the friendship has been there. And so when we, and he had, you know, worked with me, he taught me a lot about home recording and time I was down. I'm always catch up with him in Sydney. We've written songs together, and everything I ever did, I always loved with him. And it was only a few, you know, bits and pieces. But then when this came along, I was like, Damien's the man. But it was a connection of 10 years. And then, of course, I was like, okay, he's been here for 20 years as well. So he knows Australian culture. He's got the Irish background, as I spoke about. So I felt we could both bring that marriage of Ireland, Australian, that we understand both cultures from, you know, almost half our lives in both countries. So he was the perfect producer for me. Because trust, friendship, his skill, and that's what I wanted to add about him was, so I bring the live musicianship of all the different instrumentation of the fiddles and the mandolins and guitar work and the vocals, but Damien brought in the production element and changing things like the, and going with Danny Boy, and he marries it, as a good producer does, he married it all together.
It's an incredibly sophisticated album for something done in your spare room.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I heard it, and just to me, I just assumed it was in a studio somewhere.
I think I agree with you.
The production's pretty amazing.
I was blown away with it. Like, I am so happy with the results, and it's been gorgeous because we're looking at each other and go, ooh, we got a formula. But it didn't happen overnight, right? None of these things do, Benny, as you know. Like, not any artist knows that it's not an overnight thing. It's a gradual incline on your journey. And I've been recording and in home for years. I've been watching people at home too. So I was watching. COVID came along. I was out of work. I was like, okay, me and my wife, this is the time. Did a course online and, you know, started working on our own music and started doing my apprenticeship. So Damien has been doing a home recording studio for years. He used to rent his own studio, but then moved it all to home. So we both did it from home. And yeah, I was nervous there. Now I was like Googling, how do I record a fiddle and stuff, and watching all these. But look, you know, I made use of that time. I was lucky, you know, we have the internet. I was able to watch so many videos on how to make my room better, you know, for low budget. I live in an old Queenslander, but I had to get like sealant from Bunnings to seal all the doors, you know, weather sealant. I had to, you know, sort out all the corners. But it's amazing what you can do with a small amount. So, Damien brings that what you're saying, it is made in two home studios. Sydney, I was in Wollongong then. I think he had Wollongong, and I'm up in northern New South Wales. But I think it's the cores and the essence, the love for it. And Damien then.
Oh, yeah. I think the thing, one of the biggest things that stands out in this music is, and you've said this several times in the chat about this idea that you don't necessarily say getting older, but you said there just feels like there's come a time in my life where I've, you know, this and this and this and this. And I almost, as you say that, I kind of almost feel that this was the perfect timing for this album. You know, I don't think you could have done this album 15 years ago. I don't think you could have done it in 20 years. I mean, you probably can, but I think right now,
they said
you've found yourself going, everything, not just music, but everything's just bigger than me. So what's my contribution to all of that?
Yeah.
Mick, I'm going to have to do that thing that kind of breaks my heart a little bit, because I kind of figure this could go on forever, but we're creeping up to the hour, and that's usually the cutoff. But
for sure,
my last question, just quickly, are you doing another one? What's next in the world of children?
Yes.
So yes, you are. Okay.
Yes. That is the plan. Yeah, yes. Okay. Yes, we are doing another one. That is the yep. So chipping away at that. Yep, doing my research, building all the so 100%.
Like, well, then the beauty of that is it means we can then do another podcast with the release of that one and just cover all the stuff we didn't get to this time.
I'd like to just say thanks. So, you know, to talk about an artist imposter syndrome that comes in. I'm new to kids' music, so I really appreciate, you know, I met you at the Kids Award down in Sydney, and Kids Music Award, and I'm new to it. I've like been on the singer-songwriter journey for years, and then I've developed my kick-ass Irish pub band, and then I started down this journey in around 2015 or 16, and, you know, got the album out, and just thanks so much for to being embraced. Like, when I was down there, I was asked, you know, I had so many questions for all of you guys who've been much more involved in doing this, and appreciate to be, and I felt very welcome. Being my manager Fran, just we felt so welcomed, and it was really warming, and just want to say thanks for that.
It's a total pleasure, and I think I think what's really special about that album, and I'm assuming and hoping in the next one as well, is, which I've said several times, is there's just it's a very clear agenda right from the get-go. A lot of people sort of, and I, again, I'm guilty of it, you sort of develop who you are over 5-6 albums and years and years and years. Yeah. What's really strong about this, your album, is it's straight off the bat, you know what you're trying to achieve, and you know what you're trying to say, and you know what you're trying to give to children and families. And I guess your conviction and your understanding of who you are is that strong, then you can't help but just do something that means a lot, you know?
So comes back to, doesn't it, Benny, that like, and that's the journey again of maturing, that you kind of can only be honest to yourself in your own journey. That's really, I think, as an artist, that's what you're trying to find and put out and share with the world, because that is your strongest point, you know? It's all those... You know, only you can be you and all that stuff. So, yeah, absolutely. And that one, I should add as well, when you say, well, the other thing we're doing, we're actually developing a Celtic Kids show. We have our first show at festival in May. Yeah, so again, we're just trying to marry in the, our first one's in May. We're getting nervous, but yeah.
Where are you doing it?
Glen Innes Celtic Festival. Yeah. So again, look, it makes sense. We're at a Celtic festival. So, you know, I'm there as the Gathering Irish Band, and we're going to do a show as the Celtic Kids, and the show is developing with the Gathering musician. We'll hold the space musically. My wife, Amanda, who's singer-songwriter as well, Aussie lady who I met in Dublin all those years ago, her and our daughter, Kia, they'll be the kind of actors or the characters out the front. We're bringing in some Celtic mythological characters that we're working towards, and an Irish dancer. So that's the idea. It will evolve and grow, but we've got our first Celtic Kids show. So we'll see. Yeah, look, I'm kind of excited about that. It's another thing on the journey as an artist. You know, I have to sing it. Like, it's just the enjoyment, because it's maybe a bit one track mind when you start out, but then as you grow, it's like, oh my gosh, I can do a Celtic Kids show, I can do a singer songwriter, I can do, and that's a joy then to be getting to just live music in all different.
I think that's also the beauty of writing for children and being in that family zone is it does become a little bit endless, the ideas, and they're all possible. I think that's the difference, is they're all possible. You just kind of go, oh, I can actually do that and that and that and that. And I can take a risk and it doesn't have to work, or it can work. I mean, I think it just, I don't know, it's just a genre that you present so many opportunities and why not do them, you know, if you can.
Well, we're talking about kids' music. What the stuff you said there, you know, take a risk. That's what kids do all the time, isn't it? They take a risk and it doesn't work out. And we constrain ourselves as adults, and I have to push myself through those. Like, you know, there's moments in my life where I can take on the world, and there's moments where, I can't, I know, whatever way you want to say that, I can't get it, you know, I'm up and down. That's the part of, I think that's why I'm an artist as well. You're up and down and the highs and the lows. So, but as a kid, kids go for it and they fail and get up and fall down when they're trying to walk and they get up and go again. So yeah, let's push out there and just try things. And if it doesn't work, you rejig it, reinvent it, go again, back in the horse, go again.
All right, Mick, well, amazing. And next album, we'll do this all again and we'll listen to this one before we start. So we just start fresh and we go, that stuff's covered. Let's talk about other stuff, because I feel like we could have talked for a long time, which is great, which is very nice. So thanks for joining me today on Benny Asking People Questions.
Thanks so much, Benny. Pleasure talking to you, mate. Thank you.
If you'd like to know more about Mick, then head along to mickmchugh.com. And, of course, for more Benny Time goodness, head along to bennytime.com. Thanks for listening to me, Benny, asking Mick questions.